Thank you, Jay, for joining us today on the Prospect New York State videocast. A little bit of background on how we got connected. Last year, pre-showcase and post-showcase, you were one of the few guys that around the state that reached out to me via the Twitter handle from Primetime Camps. And I knew a little bit about who you were, obviously. We'll get more to that later, but I didn't know you were in New York, and it sounds like you're based in the Catskills. And just from my perspective, guys that, you know, that reached out that had a super positive, super positive feedback about trying to help out kids in New York I greatly appreciate that. And just the chance to introduce you to some people that maybe don't know your background and let them get to know how you got started and that you are a New York, born and bred high school football player. Ended up playing in Dartmouth, and we'll go through some of that stuff. But let's start with where you were born and raised. You were born and raised in Oceanside, is that correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Long Island. I'm in Long Island now too. So, in the summer times, I'm up in the Catskill region. So I was born and raised in Oceanside, New York. My dad was a high school basketball coach in New York City. Coached the majority of his time at Springfield Gardens, where he coached Norm Roberts, who was a former head coach of St. John's and one of the assistants at Kansas right now. He coached Anthony Mason, who was longtime New York Knicks all-star.
The beast.
Yeah, exactly. So, Anthony was like a part of the family.
Wow.
Playing for my dad, and he grew up without without a father, just his mom. So my dad kind of took a surrogate role as his somewhat adopted father, not technically adopted, but they had that type of relationship between them. And like you said, I went to Oceanside High School. I was a three sport athlete: football, basketball, track and field. Ended up going up to the Ivy League at Dartmouth College. Played both football and track and field up there as well, and then had a nice little journey to becoming a 10-year NFL player. And over the past 20 plus years, I've been running a summer camp, football camp, which I started up in the late 90s when I got back into the NFL. My family's been in the summer camp business. We have a facility in the Catskills, as you mentioned, called Brookwood Camps, which is located in Glen Spey, New York. And I've been running a football camp up there for 20 plus years, and we've had a full summer camp, which I've gotten full-time involved in with my brother over the past 7 or 8 years, where we do full sports academy programs up there in a summer camp environment.
And that's, going back to, you were a track and field athlete, you were a basketball player, your father was a basketball coach. I got a lot of respect for that, because I grew up with my dad as a football coach. So I know what that's like. It never leaves you. They're always the voice inside your head. And I think it changes who you are as a competitor as a result.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing, not only, just having, your father as a coach, but you just kind of see what it takes to succeed in sports. Not necessarily from him telling you, what you need to do, but, I was a kid, 4 or 5, 6 years old, tag along at his basketball practices, and, he didn't have time to work with me. He was coaching his team, but you see how, a good coach coaches, and you see how players respond, and the good ones are the ones that are attentive and put the work in and do the extra before and after practice. So you learn that just by watching and being around it as a coach's son.
That's a great observation. I almost feel like my time as a ball boy, water boy, were just as powerful as being assistant coach with him.
Absolutely.
And you're right. It's almost, some of the time spent in the locker room, on and off the field with some of those players really impacted at least me. It must have impacted you as well. And then you go to Dartmouth, you set some records throwing the football, passing touchdowns. It sounds like you threw 58 career touchdowns. You set records for total touchdowns and yards. I don't know if they still stand to this day, but probably that's impressive. Well, according to what I could find, they're up there. I don't know if Dartmouth throws the ball as much as you guys were slinging it in your day. They've got a guy coming out now who wants to is hoping for a shot at the NFL, Joe Drabino. What's your take on him? On Jared, thanks. On Jared.
I still follow the program pretty well. I know Jared's from the upstate New York area.
Yep.
He's a beast of an athlete. Big, strong, fast. I'm pretty sure he's getting looks more for tight end, H-back, type role in the NFL. And, you know, based on what I saw at Dartmouth, he has the toughness, he has the athleticism, to make that transition. And, it's a matter of getting the right, in the right program, in the right system that's, going to give him the opportunity to shine there. And, obviously it's not an easy transition to go from quarterback, to a receiver type position. But, there's plenty of precedents in front of him of guys who have done it before, and I know his competitiveness, and he's gonna work as hard as he can to make that transition.
Somebody has to believe in him and believe they fit in their system like they believed in you. Your road to Dartmouth from Oceanside, take us through that. How'd you get recruited?
Like I said before, I was a three-sport athlete in high school. I probably had more team and individual success, team success in basketball. We had a real good basketball program at Oceanside. Individual success in track and field. I was a state champion in the pentathlon for 2 years straight. Actually held the New York State record for a time in that. So I actually really thought coming out of high school, I was going to end up going to the Olympics and the decathlon. That was kind of my, my dream path. I knew I was good at football. I knew, there was a lot of interest from coaches, and, I was fortunate enough, to have a great high school coach who, was probably one of the best guys I've been around in helping his athletes transition to college. And go through the recruiting and student athlete process, and he's actually still at Oceanside High School in that and just that role. He's retired from coaching for a long time. He still does a lot of stuff with the Nassau County Coaches Association. But he was hired by the high school just to help out all the student athletes in Oceanside go through that recruiting process. And it's such a process that, Oceanside had the foresight to, see that there was a need for an extra counselor to help the coaches out, to help the guidance counselors, and kind of play in between, that role of being a recruited student athlete and also, just going through the process of finding the right college, for him. And, I just got to give a shout out to Frank Luisi, at Oceanside, my high school coach, who's, been tremendous, for me and hundreds of other student athletes that go through the process at Oceanside.
I think that's pretty unique to have a guy like that in the program helping out, just knowing the complexity of it. It sounds like you took care of your academics as a student.
Yeah.
To get into Dartmouth, you're a mechanical engineer major. Is that correct?
Engineering science major. And like you said, I was a son of two teachers. My dad was a phys ed teacher and coach. My mom was an elementary teacher. So academics was certainly something that was stressed in my household growing up, as well as athletics. When it came down to choosing, where I wanted to go, there were a few factors. Number one was a place that I could do multiple sports, play football and track and field. Well, those were the two that I was getting, recruited at the most.
So you did both at Dartmouth?
Yeah.
You ran track at Dartmouth?
I did, yeah. So, at the time that was, the Ivy League still had freshman football. So freshmen were ineligible for varsity play at the time, and there really wasn't a spring football program at all. They didn't allow the football program to do much of a spring practice session. I think they only allowed 1 or 2 days to just get together and do some work. So majority of the guys that that were at Dartmouth and across the Ivy League were two sport athletes. There were a lot of baseball players in the spring, a lot of lacrosse players, wow, a few track and field guys. So it wasn't uncommon for guys to play two sports. So the Ivy League really nurtured that with me, and gave me the opportunity to do both. And throughout the recruiting process, I looked at a number of the Ivy League schools. I took a recruiting trip out to Stanford on a track visit out there. I was recruited by a few, Virginia and Duke, with football, but they weren't offering scholarships to me. So when it came down to it, the total package of being able to compete in two sports, having a tremendous academic program, and when I took my visits, Dartmouth just was the right fit for me. It was just great, great people around there, a real down to earth atmosphere, and the coaching staff, from both football and track, probably showed the most interest in me, and that was a big part of the process as well. Is what I tell a lot of my athletes that I work with now is you want to go to a place that wants you, not necessarily the place that you just want to be in. It's not about going to the highest level place possible. Because if a coach and a program doesn't really want you, it's going to be tough to find the field.
So when you showed up to Dartmouth, you couldn't compete for the job as a freshman. But what was your mindset going in? You wanted to win that job, and you won it. And you started for 3 straight years after that, correct? I mean, it's the only way you could have to set that many records. So what was your mindset going into that competition?
Yeah, well, it was funny. Yeah. I actually, when I was a freshman, and one of the other reasons of going to Dartmouth was I knew that when I was coming in as a freshman, the starting quarterback on varsity was going to be a senior that year. So as luck would have it, I get there, and the first game, the starting quarterback, who's a senior, gets hurt. And then two more guys get hurt, and they bring a sophomore in to become the quarterback. He goes on to win the Ivy title with Dartmouth and become the rookie of the year in the in the Ivy League.
Wow.
Yeah. So here I am. I played on the freshman team and had a nice season. Certainly got noticed from the coaches. But the quarterback on varsity was a year ahead of me, and just came off the sophomore rookie of the year in the Ivy League. God. So, so I went into my sophomore year, still competing for the job, and but I kind of knew that just politically, the coach had sure, play the other guy to start out with. I think I showed enough to them that I think they knew that I was probably going to be the best guy to play that position. But the first game they started the other guy, and brought me in for a few plays, a few series here and there, and then in the second week of the season, he started again, and I came in, and when I came in the second game, I really put my stamp on the program, and had a great game. And that was when the coaches decided to to stick with me for the rest of the way. And the guy, Matt Frizica was his name, who was ahead of me, ended up becoming my top receiver.
No kidding.
The following year. So you know, when he, you know, he was a junior when I took over as a sophomore, and then his senior year, he was the leading receiver on the team. So he was, you know, he was a guy who was a tremendous athlete. You know, there was a good reason why, you know, he was able to take them to the Ivy title and win the Rookie of the Year. But, you know, I think he was more of an athlete than he was a quarterback. And, you know, when I came in, you know, it really allowed us to expand the offense a little bit more, you know, become more balanced with the pass and the run. And, you know, he made a great transition to becoming a receiver and, you know, really helped us to have a great year in 1992.
It says a lot about, you know, who you are as an athlete. And so some of these guys that show up in this day and age, just getting recruited, there's an unfortunate sense of entitlement that it'd be nice we could try to tamp down. And it's hard to do because on one hand, we're trying to help promote guys. On the other hand, there's a reality coming. And that reality is, you know, first of all, the academics are much more challenging at the college level than they are at the high school level. And then secondly, you know, nobody's going to give you a free pass anywhere. You've got to earn every play. I mean, you had to take over for a guy that won the Ivy League title as a sophomore. And it, you know, just based on the way you approached it, I didn't sense that it fazed you in the least. And so if anybody, you know, if any of our prospects are, you know, when they're paying attention to it, is that these kinds of things are going to happen to you at every turn, at the next level. You know, you're going to have to prove yourself. And that's powerful. So yeah, you finished Dartmouth. Go ahead.
You know, I think one of the things that I always tell, you know, guys, when I talk to younger athletes and talk to groups and teams and when I speak to my athletes as well is, you know, you never know when your opportunity is going to come. And, you know, you got to prepare every single day as if, you know, tomorrow is going to be the next opportunity because, you know, it could happen tomorrow. It could happen, you know, 3 months from now. It could happen, you know, another year after you get on. You know, there are a lot of guys that go to college and don't play for 2-3 years, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're asked upon to, you know, come in and perform. And if they're not ready at that point, the next guy is gonna get their shot.
Yeah.
You know, so you got a limited window of opportunity, and you know, you got to be ready at every moment's notice.
So, I mean, some of the things you're talking about and some of the things I'm talking about, sports psychology of having the mental toughness, be able to grit through those moments. You had those again. So you finished Dartmouth. You go to the East-West Shrine Game. You're the co-offensive MVP.
Yeah.
Right? Which is incredible. And then you – now take us through the next steps. You're done with the East-West Shrine Game. How did you get evaluated for the pros?
Yeah, sure. So I actually played in the week before the Shrine Game, I played in the Ivy League All-Star Game, which we took a trip out to Japan. play the Ivy All-Stars versus the Japanese All-Stars.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it was, yeah, that was a great fun opportunity for me, and you know, great chance to play with all the other seniors around the Ivy League, and you know, build that camaraderie of guys you competed against for 3-4 years. You know, there weren't any scouts out there, you know, checking it out, but, you know, but it also just gave me the opportunity at that time to, you know, get game ready again, you know, and spend a week practicing, in Japan before I, you know, flew right back to California for the East-West Shrine Game and, you know, went out, you know, had a great game. Like you said, it was co-MVP along with, Jeff Garcia.
No kidding.
And me and Jeff were two kind of unknown guys. You know, he was out of San Jose State, I was out of Dartmouth, and you know, probably two of the least known guys in that game. And you know, we both go out to win co-MVP, and it took us both you know, a number of years until we got a shot to become a starter in the NFL. You know, he took the route to the CFL. You know, I got right into the league right away, but it was, you know, a good 5-6 years until, you know, I had a chance to you know, compete for a starting job. So,
and when you did, you talk about taking over for somebody. You took over for one of the best quarterbacks who's ever played the game, Dan Marino. You go into Miami, you step right in, and people don't realize this, but you played in Miami for 5 years, right? You started 4, and I think your last year you may have dealt with an injury. But the 4 years you started, where you played 12 games or more, you won 36 games.
Oh yeah,
so you know, that's a run.
We were averaging about 10 wins a season those first years. Yeah,
Yeah, that was so. Tell me what that was like. First of all, how many years did you play with Dan Marino before you took over?
Well, I didn't play with him at all.
Never played with him, so you just took over for him.
Yeah, so he left. But really, my journey to get to Miami is the real story here.
Yeah,
and I kind of we kind of skipped over from the East West Shrine game to Miami, but you know, let me just take a little trip back for you here. I came out of Dartmouth and, like you said, the process of getting recruited and getting, chosen in the NFL, I did get an invite to the combine. Went out there, it was a funny story. We actually had a snowstorm in New York that weekend and, my flight ended up getting canceled, out to Indy.
Oh, no.
I drove from LaGuardia out to Newark to find another flight out of Newark. That flight got canceled. I drove back to JFK and finally got into Indianapolis about 2 a.m. a day late, and went through about 10 hours without any sleep of going through the medical, going through the
interviews,
the mental tests, the interviews. I got up on about a half hour, an hour sleep, had to do the drug test in the morning, did the medical stuff, and went on the field and competed. I wasn't picked in the draft. I was a free agent in the draft, so I had about 4 or 5 calls after the draft was over. Decided to go down to Philadelphia. Rich Kotite was the head coach there, and it seemed like my best opportunity to compete for a job there. They had 2 guys that were set at 1 and 2, and then their third string quarterback was just 1 year in. He was a undrafted guy the year before, so I thought it was a good opportunity for me to make a team there. And I went there. I did. I played for 2 years in Philadelphia, made the squad, but never really saw the field at all, other than preseason games. So, following year, I was cut, and I was out of the league for 2 years.
That's right.
Yeah. So, one of the things, it's very rare for someone to, be in the league, not get any playing time, be out of the league for another 2 years. And then find his way back.
You coached for those 2 years. What were you doing? Right?
I did. Yes, I actually spent 1 spring out in Amsterdam in the NFL Europe, which it was actually the precursor to NFL Europe. It was still the World League of American football at the time. So I was there. I think the year before, Kurt Warner was in Amsterdam as well, and. I think ended up playing against John Kitna that year in Europe. So there were a lot of great quarterbacks that came through that NFL Europe program. And I'm glad to see the XFL up right now and giving guys an opportunity to continue playing and showcasing themselves to hopefully get back in the league.
Yeah,
through that route, but. Like you said, I coached for 2 years at Hofstra University back near the hometown in Long Island, and after that, I finally got one opportunity to come back and compete for a spot in Minnesota.
Wow!
So 1998, I went to Minnesota, played there for a year, threw my first NFL completion to a guy you might have heard of named Randy Moss.
Randy Moss. Dante Culpepper was on that team.
Dante came
here. Oh, wow. So who was the starter that year?
Yeah, that was Randall Cunningham. So I was behind Randall for 2 years in Philadelphia, and then he ended up coming over to Minnesota, and was behind him for another year there.
Wow.
Left Minnesota, went to Jacksonville the following year, played for Tom Coughlin down there. Earned the backup role to Mark Brunell, and that was really where I got my first real playing time in the NFL.
Yeah,
got my first opportunity to start in a game. Got my first touchdown pass, my first, you know, real game time play. Because, you know, in Minnesota, we were on a 15-1 team, and the only time I got out on the field was, you know, some garbage time when we were up by 30 points and handed the ball off a few times.
Yeah.
You know, so being in Jacksonville was, you know, the first chance that other teams got a chance to really see,
you know, evaluate you,
play live and evaluate me. And, yeah. You know, we played against the Dolphins in the playoff game that year. And, you know, I had started week 17 for Jacksonville. So, you know, they were scouting me, you know, because they didn't know really if I was going to start or Brunell was going to come back off his injury. And, you know, I think that, you know, really led to, you know, me being evaluated by the Dolphin scouts and, you know, pro player personnel. And, you know, that kind of gave me the opportunity the following year when Marino retired to come in and compete for the spot there.
That's a great story. I mean, you're talking about, you know, some guys don't, you know, as you said, to be out of the league, it's one thing. To be out of the league as a quarterback and to be coaching, to get your opportunity, take that opportunity to grit through. You want to talk about, you know, learning how to get through adversity for our young athletes that are listening and coaches. Nobody's journey is going to be the same. Everybody's journey is going to be a little bit different.
Absolutely. But
you seem to have this laser-like focus about it, where it's part of who you are. It's got to be in your DNA. Just, you're not stopping until you win that competition. That's how you played the game. You know, I think the guys that you were in that era of quarterbacks, you mentioned John Kitna, Jeff Garcia, some tough competitors in that era of playing quarterback. So you get into Miami, and what's that like for you?
Well, I mean, it was amazing, you know, finally get an opportunity to compete for a starting job. You know, I went in through that off season, had a great off season, you know, really worked well. Chan Gailey was the offensive coordinator, to, you know, that first year, my first couple of years down there. You know, I felt like his system really fit, you know, my play really well. Yeah, had a real good off season, and then go into training camp, and in the first week of training camp, I find out that I got a labral tear in my right hip.
What?
So, you know, I thought it was just a little back pain. I was going through all that, and you know, I ended up getting a arthroscopic surgery on it just before the first preseason game. And was back out on the field 20 days later, made it back onto the field for the last preseason game. And, you know, did just enough to show the coaches that I was ready to go and come in to fill that starting role. And, you know, it was just a tremendous, you know, feeling to, you know, work that hard, to go through as much as I did, the ups and downs, you know, of the previous seasons, and finally, you know, run out onto the field in week one, and you know, grab the reins of you know, the Miami Dolphins. It was pretty awesome, and you know, I knew following Marino was not going to be an easy task. You know, but the way I looked at it was, you know, I wasn't trying to replace Marino. I wasn't trying to be another Dan Marino. I wasn't trying to, you know, win over the fans or anything, because I knew, you know, fans loved Marino for 17 years, and you know, he was the icon down there, and you know, all I concentrated and focused on was going out and winning games, and the way that I knew how to do it. You know, and it was going to be different from the way he played, and different from the way, you know, they won games for 17 years there. You know, we were going to use everyone out on the field. We were going to, you know, I was going to use my legs, use my head, use my arm, you know, whatever it took to get there. And, you know, we certainly, in those years, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of our salary cap, a lot of our, you know, top players were on the defensive side of the ball.
Zach Thomas, linebacker.
Zach Thomas, yeah. Jason Taylor.
Jason Taylor.
Sam Madison, mm-hmm. Pat Sertain, Tim Bowens, there was a Trace Armstrong, I could go on and on, about the guys on defense. So, we really, our offense was, kind of a hodgepodge unit. I was a journeyman quarterback. We had, Lamar Smith came in, from Seattle. He was, thrown off the, came off the trash pile of Seattle, and he was another just tough, hard nosed back. We had receivers, Rondae Gadsden, who was an Arena League receiver, who came up and had a tremendous career in the NFL, but wasn't superstar guys on the offensive side. So we had to make things work, and we just had a great locker room, a great situation there, and we just had a lot of tough, hard-nosed players that did whatever it took to get things done, and that's how we succeeded down in Miami.
It's interesting if you look at your statistics, and I know they don't always tell the whole story, but actually you averaged almost 6 yards per rush during that time. You had some, you could move, and maybe it's the pentathlon in you. But no, you could move. I mean, your yard per completion was good. Completion percentage was solid. You're a winner. I mean, it's just to me, winning football games and helping your team win games. I don't know. I just going through it myself and seeing those 4 years, and then on your fifth year, something happened to your shoulder. Is that what?
I had a little spinal injury my fifth year there, and I had to sit out the second half of the season.
Those years that you had, how many playoff games were you in? Did you have was it three, four, all four of those years were you in the playoffs?
No, we actually we missed the playoffs, and it when we were 10-6 and we were 9-7.
Yeah.
But we were in the playoffs the first 2 years there, played in three games, three playoff games over the first 2 years. And then, my second two in Miami, we missed the playoffs, as, like I said, 9-7 and 10-6, records. And then, the fifth season was just, one of those seasons you want to forget. It was a lot of, a lot of disarray throughout the organization. I'll kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, I hear you. And then where did you end up as you went forward in your career?
I left Miami and got an opportunity to come back home. So came back up to New York Jets, the hometown team, when they were still practicing out of Hofstra, where I was a previous coach a few years back. And it was great to come back to New York and be part of the hometown team. And unfortunately, there I in the third game of the season, coming in and replacing Chad Pennington after he got injured about 10 plays later into the third game, I had a career-ending injury on my shoulder.
Oh man!
So that was it. I thought I was going to be able to come back, but a year and a half and two surgeries later, the end of the road was there.
Your throwing shoulder or your lead shoulder there?
Throwing
shoulder.
Yeah.
Just a side note, but you played for I grew up with two brothers. My brother Phil's a big time Dolphins fan. And he loved you. So he just wanted to shout it out that he was a huge fan of you. And then my other brother, I was a Jets fan. So you played for both their teams. So all you got to do is play for the Giants and you're good. You got my team.
I play for Coughlin. So I'm halfway there.
True. You're right. So now you started primetime camps. You've been helping out athletes for years. Let's dive into that. Let's dive into how you got that started. I know you started with your brother, but where does it stand now? Sounds like you have a camp in the summer and you're working all year round. So let's take us through that.
Sure. So, I kind of mentioned it earlier in the program. Yep. My family ran summer camps for years. My dad was, he was the gym teacher in the winter and camp director, summer camp director in the summer. So we had a property upstate in Glens Bay called Brookwood Camps. And as I was getting through my NFL career, before that, my dad and my brother, who were both basketball guys, started up Primetime Camps as a basketball camp with Anthony Mason.
So that's awesome.
You know, Primetime really started as Anthony Mason's Primetime basketball camp. They ran, a huge basketball camp throughout the 90s up at our facility at Brookwood Camps. And in the late 90s, when I got back into Minnesota and back into the NFL, my brother and I were talking, about starting up a football camp. When I started it up, I decided, and I had been to football camps, as a kid. I had, attended other guys' camps as a player in Philadelphia. And, what I decided was, if I'm going to, do a camp, I'm not, I wasn't going to be the guy who just showed up and signed autographs and let someone else kind of run the camp for me. I wanted to be the guy who was actually coaching, and I had that experience as a coach at Hofstra University. I love working with kids. I love, mentoring them. So, when we started that up, and, that's been running our annual, big weekend overnight camp, has been running every June for the last 22 years. And we bring in all positions. We bring in college coaches from around the Northeast. We used to get all the D1 coaches until the NCAA came in and, came up with their crazy rules about the private camps.
Yep.
For that, but still get a lot of the D2, D3 school coaches that come up and help out. I guess some of my other former NFL teammates and friends to come up and work with our kids. And it's just a 72-hour a football fest from Friday night through Sunday afternoon for all players. And we got our 22nd annual coming up this June 12th to the 14th with that. So that was really how I started up with Primetime Football, was really just running those, annual camps, every year. And, I was still playing through, the first 7 or 8 years that we were running it, and then continued that ever since. And probably in the last 7 or 8 years, I got a lot more involved in doing year-round training as well. So, I started getting an opportunity to train some guys coming out of college and going through the combine process, going through NFL Pro Day process. Worked with Gary Nova out of Rutgers. He was my first college client to help train and prepare him. I ended up working out over the subsequent years with Trevor Siemian coming out of Northwestern, who was with the Jets last year and Broncos and Vikings as well. Joe Callahan, who played a couple of years in Green Bay. So yeah, that was kind of getting into the full-time training. And then I continued expanding into running some youth and high school clinics throughout the winter and spring as well. So right now I'm doing I actually just finished up tonight a 2-hour QB wide receiver clinic. So we had youth and high school kids from around Long Island come out and work with us tonight. Pretty much do weekly clinics in Long Island from December all the way through May. And then I'll do a number of one-off sessions in various areas around the tri-state area in Pennsylvania, Jersey, upstate New York as well. And then, help work with some other guys' camps and clinics also.
I often get high school coaches and kids who reach out to me on Twitter and say, hey, what camps can I go to? Where are these camps? And I said, just wait, you're going to hear about it. And, you know, soon. I didn't want to put it in a tweet. I really wanted people to get to know you so they could really find out, okay, where, what's your background? What's your story? You know, what did you have to get through to get to this point? And you don't have to give back the way you're giving back. You love it. I mean, it shows. I mean, you're giving back to the greater good of New York State and the game, the position, you know, coming from a coach's family. These are the camps that we want our guys to attend and go to. So I'm excited to send some of my own kids to your camp. And so I'm learning just as much as some of our viewers and listeners. It's powerful what you're doing. And I do think because I worked in a camp Laurel South, as we discussed, up in Maine for 6 summers, the experience of going to a camp like that, a destination camp, adds a certain value to what you're doing, a family atmosphere that you really can't get showing up to a 2-hour camp. So that culture that you're building to me is extra special. And I think people should hear that when they go to, you know, when people, there's so many options out there for people to attend this and attend that. And man, if I could, you know, if I was 16 years old, I'd be at that camp in a heartbeat. You know what
well,
I mean?
I'll tell you, you know, it's funny, you know, I mean, kids nowadays, you know, they don't take advantage of the opportunity to get out on their own at an early age. You know, like you said, you know, all these camps and clinics now, one day showcase, they go away. You know, their mom and dad drive them to the showcase. You know, a lot of the parents end up carrying their bags for them. You know, they get pampered all the way, way through, and you know, do their 2-hour showcase and go back home. And you know, when you get a chance to go away and you know, really do things on your own and create some bonds and relationships with other guys that are doing the same thing from you know, all over the region. And, you know, we get kids from Maine all the way down to, you know, Virginia, Atlanta, D.C. area that come to the camp. And, you know, just being around people from different backgrounds, from different areas, different regions, you know, gives the opportunity to venture out a little bit more. And, you know, it's just a great preparation for when you're going to end up going to the next level.
Yeah.
You know, kids that go to college, you know, that have never been away from, you know, from the hometown, you know, have a lot of trouble adapting and assimilating to the new environment. So
that's powerful.
Just small, you know, whether it's a weekend camp, a full week, a full summer, you know, whatever it is, any chance to, you know, really get away and do things independently.
Yeah.
You know, just a great learning experience. And, you know, I think the other thing, you know, that you know, with my camp and, you know, like I said, I've been running it for over 20 years. So, you know, I've had the opportunity now to see kids that are, you know, young kids that, you know, are grown up now.
That's cool.
You know, to see the development and, you know, have some of them come back now and say, you know, when I was at your camp and I met Junior Seau, you know, and he had an unbelievable impact on me, you know, just in the 10 minutes that he took the time to talk to me. Or you know, Aaron Beasley, you know, gave me some great advice last year when I was going through some struggles. And, you know, hearing those stories and, you know, having those relationships that, you know, are still around. And you know this as a coach, you know, those are the things that you really value in what we do.
And those are the things that last forever. I mean, you're talking about a variety of things here that speak to a parent and to a student athlete. One of them is, you know, high school is sort of a vacation, let's be honest, until you get out of your high school, out of your hometown, and you're forced to reinvent who you are in a new space by yourself with no help. And so camps like yours, and you take the context of football out of it, as you just did, just challenging yourself mentally and culturally, putting yourself in a spot where you're not used to being, and being being comfortable, being uncomfortable, getting into those situations where you can challenge yourself mentally. You take the football piece out of it. That alone, just for the life experience, is powerful. I went to Boise State as a junior in high school. It was one of the best things I ever did. You know, it was a few nights or whatever, you know, out in Morrisville. And I had never done anything like that. I was 16 years old, whatever it was. And then a couple of years later, I'm at that camp up in Maine, and those shaped who I am. So you're talking about shaping people, not just building quarterbacks and building, you know, athletes, which I think that's hard to come by this day and age. So I think it's a powerful thing for our listeners and viewers to hear. As we move forward into the next phase here, one of the questions we have for you is some of the last things. When you take on a quarterback or just anybody that you're working with, what is it that you're looking for? You know, if you take somebody down and say, hey, watch my tape, whatever it is, what is it? How do you play the quarterback position if you're Jay Fiedler? What are you looking for?
That's a good question. You know, I think everyone's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I look for is adaptability. And I say that all the time because, you know, as you go through playing quarterback, especially, you know, you don't know from one year to the next if you're going to have the same coach, if you're going to, you know, go to a new program, you're going to go from one high school to, you know, to college. They're going to have a different system and ask different things of you. You know, so I never want a player to kind of pigeonhole themselves into saying, I'm just a runner. I can only do, you know, throw from the pocket. You know, the more adaptable you are and being able to do, you know, multiple things, you know, from the position, the easier it is for you to, you know, create those opportunities at any level, at any place you are.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the first things I look for. Obviously, you know, once you get to know a player and get to work with them, you know, how do they process information?
Yeah.
You know, is a player attentive every time, you know, you're talking to them, every time you're going through a drill and explaining things? Do you have to explain it over and over to the guy, or does he pick it up right away and see that? And does he learn not only from the coaches that he's talking to but from also watching other players and watching, you know, everything around him? And, you know, those are a few of the initial things that I look for, you know, in an athlete that tells me, you know, whether this guy's really going to develop and improve and take the coaching and you know, get to a new level.
And then when you have them, they're in a room or you're on a field and you've seen their film, their high school tape, let's just go with high school. You have a high school kid who wants to get better. What are some of the first things that you do with that kid? Is it, you know, is it footwork? Is it mental? I mean, what is it that you talk about with that kid?
I mean, from the quarterback position, I'm a huge stickler on footwork. You know, footwork and balance are the fundamental, you know, they're the foundations of playing the position. And if you don't know how to find your balance as a quarterback from a lot of different movement patterns, then you're going to have difficulty, you know, playing at any level.
Yeah.
You know, I actually worked a couple of years ago with a pro quarterback, and I'm not going to say any names at this, but you know, he was a guy who was you know, came up through the Elite 11 and you know, was highly touted as a high school athlete, highly touted as a college guy, you know, but just couldn't, you know, really make that transition at the next level. And you know, one of the things I saw from him is, you know, he just wasn't able to ever find his balance. And you know, his arm was amazing. He could throw from, you know, anywhere. But you know, if you don't get balanced with your feet, then your accuracy is going to eventually fall. And you know, so that's one of the biggest things. That's the foundation I start with.
Yeah.
You know, getting the right footwork done, getting you know, teaching guys how to be adaptable with their footwork, to, you know, whether they're playing from the shotgun, under center, you know, I teach everything. Again, you never know when the next coach is going to tell you, you know, I want you to play from under center, and the coach after that is going to say, let's go back to the gun. You know, I think, you know, a lot of quarterbacks now that, you know, only work from the gun get very lazy with their feet. And, you know, so I always start teaching under center, and then, you know, you could, you know, really work the footwork and then get active feet. You know, for when you actually play in the gun as well. And, you know, active feet or balanced feet, and active feet, you know, will get you to your target in the most efficient way.
You sent out a tweet just recently with a series of tweets behind it about quarterback play that was really strong, and it created a lot of engagement and conversation. At least from at least the DMs on my, they say, hey, who's primetime camp? So I'll help you out. We'll show you who he is. But one of the things you said was to be creative. And to be creative within balance using good footwork is possible. And because you brought it up, you actually have to rehearse being creative and improvising in practice. You can't just expect them to do it in a game. That was a huge point that you made. I really like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I see a lot of, you know, videos, and I'm, you know, I'm all over, you know, Twitter and Instagram looking for, you know, new drills or whatever. And, you know, you could find a few diamonds in the rough, but, you know, the majority of stuff that you see online, unfortunately, is a little bit unsound to me. And, you know, one of the things that I... you know, have been talking about for a little while is, you know, there's been a big push in the quarterbacking world right now to always put their quarterback in a solid, wide base, you know, position and, you know, never get away from that.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, if you're going to react on the football field in the pocket, there's no way that you could keep a wide base and get away from pressure and move around. And, you know, with all the chaos that goes around you, you know, narrow is fast.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to reset, you know, my body, you know, from looking left to throwing right, you know, I want to get there in the quickest possible way. And that's through a narrow body position. You know, you don't see figure skaters when they do a twist in the air, spread their feet out wide,
right.
And throw their hands out wide. They get narrow to move quickly from one direction to the other. So, you know, I want my quarterbacks to be fast in resetting and get the ball out quick. You know, so I want to teach them how to throw from a narrow base. And I think that's something that, you know, no coach out there actually teaches guys to do. They just say it's bad to throw from a narrow base, so they try and get everyone back to a wide base, you know, to make their throws. But, you know, eventually you're going to have to throw from, you know, a wide variety of positions.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's off balance positions, whether it's narrow positions, you know, so let's teach our quarterbacks how to do it. And you know, what are the issues, you know, when you do throw from a narrow base of, you know, whether it's, you know, falling off your back foot instead of just rotating your hips into your throw, whether it's reaching with that front foot, you know, to get yourself off balance and you know, leave your hips behind your shoulders. That, you know, there are reasons why throwing from a narrow basis is tough and it's difficult. You know, but let's teach our quarterbacks how to do it, and you know why a certain way of doing it is going to be better and going to be helpful when you get into game situations.
It's interesting when you hear someone talk about quarterback. To me, if you take the context out of it again, you think about, you know, if you had famous guitarists that all played in famous rock bands, and they all were going to teach a guitarist how to play guitar their way, to me, every quarterback is sort of an artist and has the ability to teach it in a little bit different way than every other quarterback coach and every other. It's just going to be a little bit different, which is fascinating to me because you look at the quarterback playing the Super Bowl this year. I mean, the two styles were completely different. You know, Tom Brady's style compared to, you know, anybody, Josh Allen, you know, young or not. They're just two completely different quarterbacks. I mean, from in every phase, footwork to their arm talent, to how they use their eyes and their front shoulder, everything's just different. But I think that I will say this. It is blatantly obvious when I look at a high school prospect that has not had any quarterback training compared to the ones that have. So regardless of some of the variation that comes up, if you really want to play the quarterback position, you've got to spend, to me, a lot more extra time on that position. You know, I think offensive line's another one. I mean, you really could go down the list, wide receiver, all of them. But that in New York State, to me, has been what's been, you know, I'd say as a whole and lacking is that, you know, you'll see some of these high school programs and kids, and you can tell they've gone to camps like yours, they've gone to quarterbacks coaches or offensive line coaches, and their programs are successful because of it.
Yep.
As a whole in our state, I think we need to spend more time developing our players as individuals that so that we can help our teams, you know, develop and be more successful on a national stage. So that's something that I think camps like yours and the things that you do, you know, you can help with. We're almost out of time here, but I had to finish up with a question my brother Phil, the Miami Dolphins fan, wanted to ask you. He wanted to know if you had any inside scoop on the three round one picks the Miami Dolphins they have this year. Got any inside knowledge?
I wish I had any inside scoop on it. I don't know. You know, heck, they've been talking about Tua for you know, for a year and a half down there. You know, I think with the circumstances over the past few months have really thrown that you know, upside down. So.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what direction they're going to, but you know, I am encouraged with Brian Flores as the head coach, and you know, let me just go full circle on this. Brian Flores came out of Poly Prep in Brooklyn.
That's right.
So he's a New York native, Brooklyn guy, and when he was at BC, his younger brothers, twin brothers Danny and Luis Flores, were at primetime camps. They were at the first couple camps, and Brian came up as a counselor from BC. So
that's cool.
So it's a great you know, a coincidence, I guess. You know, that he's now the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. And you know, I think he's a tremendous coach, you know, tremendous character guy. And, you know, I'm excited to, you know, to watch him hopefully over the next decade, you know, take the program back up to new heights.
And I think he went through a tough time there at the beginning of last year. And he weathered the storm. And if you looked at the way they played as the season went on, I thought they, you know, he weathered it with the same kind of grit that Jay Fiedler that you have weathered, you know, your storms with
him. Find a way to win.
So, you know, I think that's I hope that every kid who plays football in New York and beyond that wants to play, there are every variable you could imagine is going to change in your life, whether it's on the field or off the field. You said adaptability is the number one thing you look for. Find a way to win, to me, is defines this conversation and what it means to play football at a high level in New York. And I can't thank you enough, Jay, for taking the time with us today and to, you know, honestly, just be able to share this time with a former NFL quarterback, more importantly, just somebody who really cares about helping young people succeed in life. So thank you so much, Jay, for your time tonight.
Mark, thank you, and I just want to give you a shout out as well for what you're doing with Prospect New York State, and you know, to help showcase the top players around the state, something that's been sorely needed for a long time. And you know, as someone who grew up in New York State, as someone who has worked with athletes for the last 20 years around New York. You know, I just want to give you a lot of credit for what you're doing, and and helping those guys, you know, really find their path and you know, get noticed and you know, get more exposure than has happened in a long time in New York.
I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you. And it's certainly a big undertaking. It's not just me. There's a lot of guys helping out, high school coaches, you know, some scouts that I work with, and, you know, the kids themselves deserve all the credit. We're just sort of the spotlight that, you know, we just wanted people to see what's been going on in our state for so many years. It's a massive state. I mean, we're huge. 600 high schools, 13,000 athletes, and Harvard will drive in and they'll drive to like six schools, you know, or wherever they go to in Section 5, they drive to one school and then they go to the next school. Like, it's hard to recruit our state. You know, you don't have, they're recruiting nationally. So how much time are you going to spend in a state that you got to drive all over? So
no doubt.
Listen, I look forward to working with you in the future. I hope to get to your camp maybe this summer. I'd love to just see how you do, what you do, and I look forward to networking with you in the future.
No doubt. Love to have you up there. Invite's always there.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jay. Have a great night.
Thank you, Mark.
See ya.